This episode of Stage 9 is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Hello and welcome to Stage 9, Trek FM show about the people who make Star Trek. I'm Mike.
I'm John.
And today we're going to be talking about a new movie which was just released. I know we said that we were going to be talking about like the modern era cinematographers. We're going to put a hold on that in order to discuss a brand new movie which everyone is talking about.
Yes.
Wonder Woman, starring Chris Pine. But...
And Gal Gadot as the title character, but Chris Pine is why we are covering it on Stage 9.
Yeah. As much as we love, you know, Gal Gadot, she has not been in Star Trek yet.
But she was in Star Trek Beyond director Justin Lin's Fast and Furious movies.
Yeah.
So that's an important note too. So she's no stranger to the show.
Definitely not. So, before we talk about that, let's talk about a little bit of news. This is rather interesting. There was an article which was published on Trek Movie where they interviewed Nicholas Meyer, and they were mainly talking about the 35th anniversary of Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. But one of the things which Meyer dropped in the interview was... that he's working on another Star Trek project.
He is indeed. I think he even checked himself. He's like, no, I think I can tell you this. Yeah, I think he had a little bit of fun with it, knowing that he was dropping a little tidbit there.
Yeah, for what he said, one thing that has nothing to do with Discovery is that I am working on another Star Trek project, but I can't discuss that either. And then I believe it was Anthony Pascal was interviewing him. He said, are we talking more feature film? Because as far as I know, there is only one television project, I assume. And Meyer's response was, you can assume.
Yeah.
So what does that mean? I mean, first off, it means that Meyer is working on a Star Trek project. So no matter the medium, that's awesome.
Yes.
But what do you think it is?
I have no idea. When we first read the article, we were sort of going back and forth. I think it would be cool if it was a book that did a lot of world building. Because since he's been involved in the writer's room since the beginning, it would pretty much make sense. I mean, and it would get fans jazzed as opposed to, you know, just like a typical tie-in book or anything like that. It could be all of the stuff to set the stage for... Discovery, like, you know, repaint the world for us so that we know what to expect. Would that happen? I don't know. I mean, I think it'd be fun if maybe he was directing, I don't know, like some sort of standalone, maybe something just for the app or for TV or something. That would be neat.
That'd be cool. You know, I mean, I don't know. I guess the first thing that you would think would be movie, just naturally, that's kind of because, you know, I mean, they're working on another movie and everything, but, you know, they've already established, you know, a couple writers are on that, and they've also, you know, hinted at a couple more writers on that. And, you know, I mean, the other thing about it is, like, I mean, I know that he has a relationship with J.J. Abrams, a personal relationship that goes back decades, but does he have a relationship with Paramount, really? And Paramount being Paramount, are they going to give it to him even though he's, you know, like Mr. Star Trek? Or are they going to go with the hot hand in a sense, you know, and the young up-and-coming writers or directors? You know, I almost think that because of his work on Discovery, he probably has a better relationship with CBS than with Paramount, right?
Yeah.
I mean, just And, you know, everyone, you know, seems to be happy with, you know, Meyer's work on the show and everything like that. And, you know, they're obviously really confident about Discovery since they're, like, expanding in a couple episodes. Is it really that outrageous to think that maybe they'd be developing a second Star Trek show and that maybe they'd get him to create it?
You know, I think that considering the fact that they've always known, the fans have been not shy about letting them know that it's a big ask to have, you know, the pay app and everything. What better way to sweeten the pot than say, hey, and Nicholas Meyer's Star Trek thing, too. I mean, then I think you ameliorate a lot of people who are kind of salty about having to pay the monthly fee to see the show. Well, it's not just one new Star Trek show. I think it's two. But I don't know. I don't lean toward show. I lean toward something standalone, but I do think it, I think that it will not be with Paramount. I'm firmly convinced that he will be doing something for either the CBS app exclusive or television or something like that.
I mean, it seems, I mean, the book idea definitely, you know, seems to make sense. I'm sure that, you know, the marketing department and whatnot at CBS Publishing, and not to mention IDW comic books, I'm sure that they have their hand on the pulse of Trekkies, you know, enough to know that if Nicholas Meyer were to be like, hey, could I write a Star Trek book? They'd be like, yep, you know, tell us you know, how much we need to pay you to do that, and it's a done deal. You know what I mean?
There is some sick and twisted little part of my soul that would actually get a big kick. I know I'd get a big kick out of it if, you know, they've got this thing where it's like, oh, I'm working on a Star Trek project, and I can't really tell. And you find out he just was building a model. He's like, this is the Star Trek project I was working on. What did you guys think I was talking about?
Yep.
That seems like it would fit with his sense of humor, too.
It does. It does. I mean, like, the first thing that I thought of, just, like, completely, I don't, for no reason at all, I'm like, I bet it's musical theater. Like, I'm just guessing that he's writing a Star Trek musical which will appear on Broadway. That's my guess. For absolutely no reason at all. I don't know why. I was just like, that seems like something he would do.
We do know that he loves opera.
There you go.
I don't think he'd write an opera, but like a musical, like Star Trek Hamilton style or something like that. Okay.
I don't think that he's ever written anything for the stage, as far as I know. You know, he has written like 6 or 7 novels. He has written tons and tons of movies and directed tons and tons of movies. You know, so who knows? But it's interesting. It's interesting.
It is. You know, hey, I'm on board. And that, you know, that's definitely, I think your question when we read it was like, why is this not lighting the internet on fire?
Yeah.
And I would counter that there are a lot of other things that, you know, are taking people's attention. But at the same time, yeah, you would think that the Trekkiverse would have lit up a little bit more.
I didn't even notice it until like 2 days after it was published.
Is it possible that this is something they would, announce at the next Star Trek convention?
They don't announce stuff at Star Trek conventions. They really
don't. So San Diego Comic-Con is what you're telling me.
San Diego Comic-Con, yeah, they could do that there. Okay.
Or New York Comic-Con.
But who even knows how far along it is, you know?
That's true.
I mean, it's just
if it were a TV show, then it's, you know, earliest possible stages, because you have to start assembling people. Like, people are going to notice. It's not like you can start putting together a TV show in secret.
Or
a movie, or a, you know, a TV movie or anything like that, you know?
And as popular as they think Discovery is going to be, I highly, highly doubt that they're going to green light a second Star Trek show until they at least see some return on investment in this one, you know what I mean?
I'd say that's a safe bet.
But we'll see. I mean, hey, it could be a movie. It could be, you know, I mean, that would be interesting to see his take on the Kelvin universe. I'd love to see that. Maybe it's a nonfiction book of some sort. He already wrote one of those, but my thinking with that is if it were, he would be allowed to talk about it. You know, that's my guess. I don't know.
unless it's something like the, he's writing the behind the scenes story of Discovery coming together or something like that.
Yeah. Although he said it doesn't have anything to do with Discovery.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Which, by the way, we didn't mention this at all, but, you know, David Mack is writing that first Discovery novel, and he did reveal that it is going to be a prequel to the pilot. So,
well, now hold on a second. Yeah. Okay, because I think that the term prequel gets misused a lot. Is it coming out before the show?
No.
Oh,
they say it's
going to
come out shortly after the show premieres. Okay.
Because the thing is, you know, other franchise and everything, but when they released Rogue One Catalyst, everybody was saying, oh, this is the prequel to Rogue One. It's like, no, this was released beforehand. No, this doesn't, no.
I guess, but it was written after Rogue One.
Doesn't matter.
Okay.
Release order determines whether it's a prequel or a sequel.
So does that mean that Star Wars is based on a novel since the book came out first?
No.
Okay.
Because Catalyst is a standalone thing, whereas the Star Wars book is based on a script. It's an adaptation as opposed to Catalyst, which is a standalone.
Okay.
It's not based on a pre-existing work.
All right. Fair enough. Anyway, regardless of any of that, it's interesting and fun to speculate. Hey, if you have any ideas as to what this may be, share them with us. You know, what do you think? Is it going to be a book? Is it going to be a show? Is it going to be a movie? And what would you most like to see from Meyer? Just hit us up on the Babel Conference or tweet us at Trek FM.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
We'd love to hear your thoughts.
For sure. Always. Okay, so should we move on to our feature presentation?
Yeah, let's move on to our feature presentation, Wonder Woman.
Okay, this is a new film, which is written by Alan Heinberg from The O.C. and Sex and the City, as well as various comic books. He's a very good writer. And it was directed by Patty Jenkins, who directed Monster back in the day. And a commercial for Sears at the movie theater that I worked at 10 years ago.
Yeah.
That was cool. I get to see her work up close and personal.
But also a very well-established TV director.
Yeah, having worked on things like... I know she worked on Entourage.
Yeah, well, she also did Arrested Development.
Yeah.
And The Killing, which is a show that I didn't watch. But
I didn't watch it either, but she directed the pilot for that one. And I think she got... Did she get nominated for an Emmy or a Directors Guild Award or something like that for The Killing?
I don't remember which award it was.
I don't know. But she did, she was, you know, and that's pretty big, directing a pilot for a hit show. So, Wonder Woman. It stars Gal Gadot. Sorry.
Gadot, yes.
Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman and Chris Pine as Captain...
Steve Trevor,
yes.
Yeah.
And you want to give a synopsis of Wonder Woman?
Sure. It's the story of Wonder Woman. No, but yes. She, Wonder Woman is an Amazonian princess living on an island that is under the protection of Zeus, an invisibility cloak, basically. And they have managed to live in isolation from the world until the world comes and finds them in the form of Captain Steve Trevor. And he winds up penetrating the invisibility cloak, and then the people chasing him penetrate it as well. And Wonder Woman decides that it is time to go out into the world and fulfill her destiny of defeating Ares, the god of war, who... she is convinced is the reason for all of the calamity in the world.
And hijinks ensue.
Mm. Hijinks do ensue. Very much so.
Yeah. So, this is the fourth movie in the new DC Extended Universe, as they're referring to it.
After
Man of Steel, Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice, and Suicide Squad.
I always forget about Suicide Squad.
That's okay. And what did you think about the movie in general?
In general, I really enjoyed it. I found it was and this is a high compliment for me, it was a nice, refreshing callback to the way superhero movies used to be. It's straightforward, well-plotted, epic in its scope, and has an interesting origin story. It doesn't try to overcomplicate itself. It doesn't try to put on airs. For me, I consider it very much a descendant. And again, this is a compliment of the superhero school that sort of sprung out of the 1989 Batman, like that sort of superhero movie where it's, you have a hero you can cheer for. There's no, you know, she has no conflict about being a hero. She doesn't not want to be a hero. She wants to go out into the world and do good things. And it, you know, I really enjoyed it from beginning to finish. What about you?
Yeah, I liked it a lot too. I would almost take that back further to, you know, the Superman movie that Richard Donner directed in the 70s.
Sure, I could see that. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it is, like, I agree with everything that you're saying, and it's interesting to me because I've seen it twice now, and the first time I watched it, I thought, like, this is good. But it didn't blow me away like everyone else, you know? And yet mm-hmm. there were some things in it which I really sort of like kept on thinking about, you know, and really made an impact on me.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to watch it again. And I got to see it again because I went to see it with my family in Dolby Cinema, which is pretty amazing if you have a chance.
Is that the director's preferred presentation?
I'm pretty sure because she did a thing. Well, she might prefer like 70 millimeter actually, but that's not around here. But she did a thing where like IMAX, you know, they always like are at the press junkets right. interviewing people. And they're like, so what did you think about the movie in IMAX? And she's like, oh, it's really cool. It's nice seeing it on such a big screen. I kind of wish that, you know, they had some 2D screenings as well as 3D, but, you know, whatever.
Nice. And I'm down with, she just went up several notches in everybody's book.
Yeah. So, I mean, the fact that your average Dolby Cinema screen is the same size as your average IMAX screen, and yet Limax. The picture quality, yeah, LIMAX, and the picture quality is substantially greater than IMAX. I would guess that given the option, she would prefer the Dolby. But I also saw it in standard 2K digital projection with a xenon bulb and 7.1 sound, and it played perfectly well in that format too.
So. That was something that actually I really have to you know tip my hat to her is I really think that she took I felt that there was a lot of attention to detail on this that broke in a way more to my liking than previous DC Comics movies, and you know that was just sort of like in my wheelhouse for preference because you know just because you mentioned the presentation and everything. I thought the movie looked great. It was shot really well. Everything about it looked like I enjoyed looking at the picture on the screen. Mm-hmm. I wasn't like, this is just showing me an image. This looked like something where a director and a cinematographer sat down and said, how are we going to make this pop? How are we going to make this work really well? And especially those early island scenes when like she goes out to the cliff before, you know, he crash lands and everything. I mean, just the colors in that were just so gorgeous, and then the conscious shift during the war scenes and everything. But I also thought that the sound mix, and I, you know, directors do have something to do with this. I thought the sound mix was one of the things that I've consistently hammered the DC movies on up to this point is I haven't liked the sound mixes in them, and I thought that this was really, really mixed well. For me, that just speaks to the presentation. I mean, I could tell a difference. Maybe it's just the viewing environment was different or better or something like that. But the movie sounded really good.
No, yeah, I did see an interview where she was talking about the sound mix, and it sounded like she was like very, very conscious of, you know, placement of effects and everything like that. And you know, I'm sure all directors are, but you know, you don't usually hear them verbalize that, you know. And she was like she was talking about like. In that same interview, I think, that IMAX interview, she's like, I'm always worried about, you know, the sound being like in front of or behind the viewer, you know, based on how far away the screen is from the viewer and all that stuff. And with IMAX, you don't have to worry about that, but blah, blah, blah. I don't know. So it sounds like she really did, you know,
cool.
put a lot of effort into the mix of the movie. And yeah, you're right. It did sound great. When I did see it that second time, I liked it a whole bunch more, and there were moments in it which really, you know, kind of stood out to me. And well, I think, you know, the ending does sort of kind of fall into this you know, superhero formula kind of thing, you know, with like the big battle at the end with the whatever, you know, I can forgive it. And I thought that it was on the whole really good. And, you know, a big part of that, I think, really is the fact that, I mean, just like everyone's talking about, like, this is, you know, one of the first female superheroes which we've seen on the big screen, at least in a movie which is, you know, worthy.
We're not going to count Tank Girl. I can tell you that.
Tank Girl, I haven't seen Tank Girl. I was thinking more along the lines of Catwoman and Elektra, you know?
Yes.
Those movies are absolute garbage, right? And
they're better than Tank Girl.
Okay, I haven't seen Tank Girl, but but yeah, I mean, it's, you know, and it's been one of those things where, you know, like the studios would use those as an excuse, like, oh, why would we do a female superhero? I mean, look at how nobody went to see Catwoman, and look at how nobody went to see Elektra. And it's like, yeah, nobody went to see those movies because they were terrible movies, okay?
Right.
And, you know, I saw it a lot, you know, like at the theater that I went to and everything. Like, there were a lot of women going to see these movies, you know? Mm-hmm. And I mean, you certainly see it online too, you know, all these stories about, you know, people taking their, you know, little girls to see it and stuff like that. And, you know, it is inspiring in a lot of ways. And it is really cool to kind of like see that on the screen. And it's reflected in the movie, you know? I mean, and I think that they do like a really good job of sort of, you know, showing her, you know, basically fighting against the patriarchy of, you know, 19 teens. I don't know, whatever you want to call
teens.
It.
Yeah.
Teens, you know, Europe and everything. And it's cool. And it's a lot of fun for sure, too. And, yeah, I mean, Gal Gadot is perfect, I think, in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And, yeah, and then there's Chris Pine.
And her chemistry with him was, I thought, legit amazing. They were, they really worked well together. There was a real chemistry, you know, and it's such a cliche to say, oh, they have real chemistry together. But the thing is, I could really believe these people. I mean, interacting, and like they made me believe in them, even though I know both of these, you know, Captain Kirk, for Pete's sake, I forgot he was Captain Kirk. That's pretty great. Yeah. And, I think that the performances in the film all around were really good, but I think also I've been referring to this as Chris Pine's Get Out of Star Trek free card. I'm dead serious. If the fourth movie is stalled and they don't really know what they want to do and it's taking forever, he has his escape route right now. People might not want to hear it, and I want him to play Captain Kirk again, but he, you know, he is basically, I haven't seen Hell or High Water, but I've heard nothing but great things about it and his performance in it. And then he has this, which is, you know, a different role. I mean, he brings a lot of the same energy and charisma that he does as Captain Kirk to this, but he does in fact play a different character. I didn't feel like this was Captain Kirk in World War One. I thought this was an actor who knows how to do comedy, you know, bringing those same skills to a different character. And, you know, I think that he really does have an opportunity here to turn this into a big, I mean, obviously Gal Gadot can write her own check at this point. And I think that he's in a position now where he can just, it could take off for him big time.
Yeah. I mean, he is really good in the movie. It's, you know, kind of interesting for him because like we think of him as Captain Kirk, you know, who is like the biggest, you know, sort of like leading man in our sort of like a sphere of whatever, because it's Star Trek and it's Captain Kirk, you know, and there's all the history that goes along with it. And in this movie, to see him in very much a supporting role, to see him as, you know, the romantic, you know, love interest and mm-hmm. not the star, not the superhero, I think was really cool. And you're right that he is really good in it. And one of the things which I've always found to be really interesting about it is, you know, people would talk about like, oh, his performance in, you know, Star Trek, he's not like doing a Shatner imitation, right? He's mm-hmm. playing the character as, you know, he as someone would in the year 2009. He's doing it straight. There's certain times where there might be like an inflection or something, which, you know, kind of is reminiscent of Shatner, but by no means is it like a Shatner parody, right?
Right.
And did you see Into the Woods?
Yes, I did.
That movie is terrible. But yes, in that movie, one of the things that I found to be really, really fascinating was Chris Pine's performance. Because to me, like as soon as I came out of the theater, I'm like, that's Chris Pine playing William Shatner.
Yes, it was. Yes, it absolutely was. I completely agree with you.
Yeah.
That was it almost felt like in that movie he was purging some demons that he couldn't, you know, mm-hmm. like this was his way of, you know, getting that out of his system because of what he had, you know, done previous with Star Trek. I agree with you.
For sure, for sure. And I think you see moments of that here. Like the one that really kind of stands out to me is when they're using the lasso of truth on him.
Yeah.
You know, there are some choices that he makes there. And the way that it was edited together, I think, because it's so weird and inconsistent and everything, like part of me thinks like they're like, okay, do it once like this. Okay, now bring it back a little bit. Okay, mm-hmm. now on this take, do it super duper crazy, because I don't think they really knew what they wanted, and they wanted to have like a million choices to see what worked in the editing.
Sure.
And I think in the editing, this is pure speculation on my part, but just the way the scene is cut together, I really feel like they were going back and forth between those different takes, and like there's no consistency to it in terms of his performance. And maybe that's adding to it, but I think also part of it is just it's so over the top, and part of it is just like, how do you do that? You know, unless you have like a clear vision for how this lasso of truth works, you know, well, you've got a lot of latitude in terms of your performance, you know?
Yeah, yeah. The similarity between him and Shatner that I see is that he is extremely comfortable with comedy. And that's something that Shatner's style, when he was allowed to be a little funnier, is really when he comes alive, is when he can loosen up a little bit with comedy. And Pine, you know, this is the thing, is everybody's, you know, oh, the DC thing, it doesn't matter what universe it's in. This made me laugh out loud.
Mm-hmm.
Like he actually got laughs. Gal Gadot got laughs out of me. A lot of people in this movie actually got legit laughs out of me. And it wasn't just because they had a script doctor come in and decide DC had to be more serious. They had good actors making these choices, and it worked really well. And Pine, that scene when they're in the boat and she's very, you know, innocently describing what life is like on her island and everything, his shtick through that whole scene is just brilliant. It's great. It like I loved it. I could watch that over and over again.
Yeah.
He's got like an old school movie star charisma in those types of scenes.
Yeah, for sure. You know, the whole thing about, you know, she keeps on referring to him as the average man, and he's like, I think I'm above average. Yeah, I mean, that was really good. And as far as like the whole, I mean, I think that rumor has been debunked. But if you're a movie studio and you want to do a movie without any jokes, you don't hire Alan Heinberg to write your script, you know?
Right.
I mean, that guy was doing The OC and, you know, Sex and the City and you know, a ton of other things. He's going to be funny. He's going to give you something which is amusing at times, for sure.
Absolutely.
So, So yeah, I don't know. I thought that he was really good in the movie, you know, in a very different role, I think, than what you see him in Star Trek. And yeah, on the whole, I was very impressed with the film. The more I think about it, the more I like it. You know, we didn't even mention the score, which is outstanding, I thought.
I will give a lot of credit because I hated that Wonder Woman theme, like in the trailers. Really? Oh my gosh. The way it was done in Batman versus Superman and the way it was at the end of the trailer, I couldn't, like, it was seriously, it was as if a cat having an epileptic seizure attacked my spinal column. Like, okay. I just locked up. I couldn't stand it. But I don't know what they did. Maybe this speaks to the sound mixing or something like that. But the percussion was higher during the theme, and the guitar was a little bit more subdued. And I actually was like, okay, no, this is pretty good. I like this. And I really do think it was just the orchestration of it just made it work better.
Yeah. Well, a different composer this time around, Rupert Gregson Williams, did it. And I don't know. I liked the original theme, you know, as it appeared in Batman versus Superman, but I really did like this score as well. But speaking of Batman versus Superman, have you seen all four of these DC?
I have.
Okay.
I have indeed.
How would you rank them in order of quality?
This is the only one where I walked out of the movie theater and said, I'd like to see that again. So that should give you an idea. I have liked it more the more I've thought about it. Man of Steel would come in second after that, and I liked Man of Steel. I wasn't crazy about Man of Steel. I didn't like the choice of how they arranged the story. That annoyed me. Batman versus Superman, the ultimate director's extended whatever edition, still did not enjoy it, but it was better than the theatrical cut. Suicide Squad, I think, is sort of beneath contempt. I came out of it like, oh, you know, I liked some of those choices. And then that of the four of them, that's the one I would never, ever watch again. But the thing is, to speak to your point about the ending, I just want to say that given how the ending plays out and who she defeats, I really, 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 that ending of Batman versus Superman, I don't understand why she couldn't just show up and just tear Doomsday in half and be done with it. It was puzzling to me.
I guess there's always, you know, I mean, hey, she's getting older, you know,
no.
It's 100 years
no.
later.
No.
I mean, they said she was 800 years old in this one. No. So when 900 hey. Years old you reach, look as good, you will not.
Hmm? Yeah. Are you kidding me? Yoda's looking at that like, what? Come on. Really?
I'm just saying, you know.
No.
Okay.
No.
All right. As far as my rankings, I'm way all over the place on this. I mean,
shocking.
Like Suicide Squad is definitely the worst, right?
Yes.
And there's like a thing about it where, like, when I watch it, I enjoy it, but at the same time, like intellectually, I'm like, this movie, like, and I don't do this. You know, I know people who do this all the time. I'm not one of those people, but with Suicide Squad, the plot literally makes no sense at all. Okay, the whole
you're correct,
makes absolutely no sense.
The existence of the team, the impetus for constructing the team, makes no sense.
Well, that
because these people are supposed to keep Superman in check.
Well, whatever.
No, there is nobody on that team. Not collectively, not individually. There's nobody on that team that could make a lick of difference to Superman.
That, you know, whatever. I mean, you can say whatever. Maybe they're being a little overly ambitious. But, like, the plot of the movie, the idea of, like, we need to send them in to save this person and bring her out. And, like, literally, all they do is they, like, they land a helicopter. They go through all these obstacles in a city. They get to a building. And then literally all they do is escort this person up to the roof of the building where another helicopter is coming to pick her up. Yes. Why didn't they just have the helicopter go straight to the building and whatever.
It's a good question, Mike.
That's the thing really that bothers question. Me. But whatever. But at the same time, there's like a lot of stuff in there which I find like very enjoyable. And that level, I like the movie. But with the other three, like, I definitely don't hate them. Like, I came out of all of them saying, like, that was pretty good. You know, Man of Steel, I really responded to at the time. I thought it was definitely the best Superman movie ever, even though I think that a lot of the choices they make with the character are weird and stupid. Same thing with Batman versus Superman, where, like, I mean, we're coming off of, you know, the Dark Knight trilogy, and it's like, okay, how are you going to do Batman now? Like, really, like, how are you going to do Batman now? Because there's really nothing that you can do that will, I mean, add to this character. But then again, I said the same thing after Batman Begins, and then they came out with Dark Knight. But I mean, like, literally, it's like once you've made, you know, the absolute best interpretation of Batman ever, what are you going to do? You can't top it, you know? And what you end up doing is something which is kind of dumb. It's kind of a dumb version of the character. And it's kind of a weird, like, and I know that Batman is always sort of fascist, and maybe that's just one of the things.
Well,
maybe,
no, he's not.
No, you don't think
so? Let's not go down that road.
Okay.
I think you shouldn't go down that road because you're already going to get enough angry letters from Matthew Rushing. For everything you've just said.
Okay, fine. But regardless of that, you know, I mean, certainly there is some stuff in Batman. And part of that is about his growth as a character. But it's weird because we're starting at, like, the end of his career. And it's like, Batman would have learned these lessons by now. And, you know, like with Superman and Man of Steel, you're like, okay, you know, he's breaking some necks. But it's his first day on the job. I'll forgive him that, you know? But when Batman starts saying, like, if there's even a 1% chance that he's bad, we need to take it as an absolute truth. I'm like, seriously, Batman? I thought you were smart, you know? Like, what is this, you know? Well, and then by the end of the movie, Batman, he's like, okay, I was kind of wrong about that, you know? But...
look, the interpretation of Batman I didn't have the problem with because I could understand somebody going through... You know, like basically, Batman is almost a musing on people's reaction to terrorism. You know, and like, you know, going overboard in one direction, sort of thing. Which is, you know, which is cool, which I like. Like Ben Affleck's Batman was cool by my. He wasn't the problem with the movie, basically. And Man of Steel, the stuff that took me out of it was every time I was starting to invest emotionally in the character that an arc was starting, it would cut and go to something, you know, something else in the past or something like that. And it would drive me nuts because I'm just getting warmed up to connect to the character. And then all of a sudden it jumps off. And as for the ending of Man of Steel, he had, you know, look, it wasn't just the family. It was like Zod was like, I'm never going to stop. You have to kill me if you want this to stop. And okay, Superman makes the right choice in that. In that situation. So.
I really don't have a problem with him breaking Zod's neck. I don't necessarily have a problem with him leveling a city either because I forgive him for being, you know, careless in that moment. Clumsy, I guess that's a word you could use. But at the same time, I like the fact that Batman versus Superman deals with it. You know, there is follow-up to that. You know, everyone's like, what the hell? He destroyed a city. And then in Batman versus Superman, the characters are like, what the hell? He destroyed a city. You know, and I like that, you know. And I like Batman versus Superman a lot. I really don't understand the super harsh criticism of it. I think it's just not... you know, not as good as what we had just experienced. And I mean, I don't like Batman using guns. I don't like,
I don't care about that.
I wish Batman were smart. I mean, Batman did use guns back in the day, but now.
Forget used guns back in the day. Batman, he killed plenty of people in the 1989 Batman, and then Batman Returns. He stuck a bomb onto a guy and pushed him down a hole and then smiled about it.
And if you were in One Stop Comics in 1995, you would have been privy to numerous conversations where, you know, 15-year-old me is like, I like Batman Returns. And all of my older coworkers are like, what's wrong with you? Batman kills in those movies. Those movies are terrible. You should be watching the animated series.
But see, that's the thing, is the animated series sort of like worked against that whole Batman mythos in this, because it was obviously for the sake of, they had to have him plainly state in the cartoon, it's like, I'm never going to kill anyone.
No, so see, I don't think that's true.
Because that's where it all begins. In the modern era, that's the first time Batman utters on screen, I'm not going to kill anybody.
He doesn't like, do it in year kill. One?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, because I'm pretty sure
Frank Miller's Batman never has a problem killing people.
I mean, he kills people in Dark Knight Returns, right? But he doesn't kill anyone in year one. I'm pretty sure that was in the comics before it was in the animated series.
It has been a long time since I read year one. I know that Batman avoids killing people. He doesn't kill anyone.
And he doesn't use a gun. He definitely doesn't use a gun.
But the thing is, you have the whole argument about the Killing Joke. Does he kill Joker at the end of the Killing Joke?
Right? That argument didn't start until like 3 weeks ago. So, you know.
You know, people didn't really start. Well, you know what? Plenty of people claim that they were thinking that before the Smodcast came out with it. But
yeah, they're all lying. Yes. Or else we would have been discussing that a lot earlier too. But
for decades.
Yes, but regardless of any of that, my point is that I don't particularly like the interpretation of Batman in Batman versus Superman. But does that make it a bad movie? I mean, Batman has had a million interpretations over the years, and I enjoy Batman versus Superman a lot. But here's my thing, like in terms of the whole ranking of the things, I know this is a self-imposed whatever, but I really don't know where I would put Wonder Woman. Like, I think Batman versus Superman is more ambitious. Wonder Woman, I think, is a much smaller story, and maybe it handles that better, even though structurally, I'm always not a big fan of movies which are like, let me remember this story, contains
multiple viewpoints.
Okay,
the framing device is obviously just to tie it into everything.
I know.
Right? I completely agree with you. The story is actually better without that framing device.
Yeah.
But you just sort of got to be like, okay. You know, it is what it is.
So yeah, so where do I put? I don't know where I put. I put Suicide Squad number 4, and I guess Man of Steel, Batman versus Superman, and Wonder Woman are all tied for number 1.
No, Wonder Woman's number 1.
Okay, fair enough. Anyway, enough talk about Batman and Superman and Wonder Woman for now. Yeah. We're probably not going to talk about Justice League on this show, so maybe forever. If you do want some more Wonder Woman talk, you can head over to Commentary Trek Stars right here on Trek FM, where in episode 84, we discuss the, I'm not going to say failed television pilot, but the unsuccessful television pilot for...
Which means it's failed.
Okay, fine. For the Wonder Woman TV show, which existed before the one which everyone knows and loves, which was created by Star Trek writer-producer John D.F. Black. That episode, it's Commentary Trek Stars 84. The name of the episode is Waiting for Godot, and you can check that out. And let us know what you think. All right, so it's been fun talking about Wonder Woman today, but that's not all we're talking about here on Trek FM this week, so here's a look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Ready Room.
It's interesting how they're doing the casting, but I think it would be nice to actually have two ships involved, because one thing that I feel Star Trek has long suffered from, even with Deep Space Nine, which did try to break out of it a bit, is that small world syndrome.
Standard orbit.
And Jim Carrey, as they're fighting, he's like singing along. He's like, brah, brah. As he's fighting, he's singing along as he's fighting Matthew Broderick. And man, it's just so good. Like, to me, that's like, when I think of Star Trek and pop culture, like, that is the one, that's the first scene that I think of in the cable guy there.
The orb.
This is another thing that we're seeing all over the world, but this whole idea that just because something is hard, we should avoid it. But that is absolutely untrue. I mean, just look at your life, look at my life, I look at anybody's life, and the things where people have learned the most have been the hard things.
To the journey!
Wait, you're saying it's like matter and antimatter when they interact? They
it's like costume and non-costume.
So costumes and non-costumes annihilate each other.
Yes.
In Voyager.
Exactly. That is how the universe is going to ultimately be destroyed, due to the interaction of naked people and people wearing clothes.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out these shows and discover what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're on Apple, hit that subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on your iPhone or iPad or Apple TV or your HomePod or whatever other things Apple is releasing in the not-too-distant future. And also leave us a star rating and a review. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find us on Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, or you can stream and download right from our website and grab the RSS link as well. We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place is to join the larger conversation at the Babel Conference, which is our listener group on Facebook. Just type Babel, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and we should come right up. You could also send us an email at trek.fm/contact. Just find Stage 9 in the little drop-down thing, and then that'll come right to us. Mm-hmm. Or you can find us on Twitter at trek.fm or on Facebook at facebook.com/trek.fm. John, where can people find you on the internet?
Oh, look for Kessel Junkie. He's out there. You can also find me co-hosting Words with Nerds with my pal Craig, which is a weekly zany comedy show. You can also find me co-hosting Aggressive Negotiations with Matthew Rushing over on the Nerd Party Network. And also on the Nerd Party Network, I am co-hosting a show with you, Mike Schindler, called Great Shot Kid.
Yeah, on that show we talk about the people who make Star Wars. And you can find me on TalkFilmSociety.com doing a show called Soderbergh 2828, where we look at all of Steven Soderbergh's movies leading up to the release of Logan Lucky. And you can also find me on CommentaryTrackStars.com doing a show called Commentary Track Stars, which if you take a look maybe a week from now, you may find an audio commentary for a movie about two superheroes who face off against one another at the dawn of justice.
Oh, really? Okay. Maybe. Because there are technically three heroes in that movie, Mike.
Yeah, but there's only two who are fighting each other, right?
Yeah, okay. Technicality.
All right. So anyway, you might find that over there if you look hard enough, like at the top of the page. You can also find me on Twitter at Mumbles3K. Okay, we'd like to thank our associate producers today, Jeff Sutter and Chris Steftenagel.
Thank you
very much, guys. If you'd like to help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Just visit patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, to get all the details. And you get perks like early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more. So, you know, head on over there. Help us out if you can. You'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. All right, so that's it for this week. Next week, John's going to take a bit of a vacation.
I am. Yeah. I am. I've earned it, I think, Mike.
Yeah, you've done 51 episodes of Stage 9. What are you going to do next?
I'm moving close to Disney World.
That's cool. That's cool because they've got a Giordano's pizza down there. So
and Star Tours.
And Star Tours. This is true. This is true. Yeah. This is true. So yes, I will be back next week to take a look at the new film by Star Trek Discovery co-creator Alex Kurtzman, The Mummy.